And this is JPR, Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. It's 8:40 on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley, reminding you that we are online as well as on the air. The program website is jeffexchange.org. You can find all of our interviews archived there, dating back quite a few years. We also have a Listen Live link there and anywhere on the parent site, ijpr.org, that allows you to use the internet as your radio source. So you can get, actually, you know, depending on where you're listening, you might get a better sound than you're getting out of AM. Don't forget, we are in the Medford-Ashland area at 102.3, but that's all available to you online at ijpr.org and jeffexchange.org. Find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter. Take part in the program as it happens. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Every month, we get to meet people whose individual stories are intertwined with the story of the region. Stories of Southern Oregon are compiled by Maureen Flanagan Battistella for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, SODA, at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. This month, Maureen is back with Richard Roseberg, B-E-R-G, so not quite like the city. He's the director of the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center near Medford. SORAC has a long history helping the region's farmers and orchardists do their work better. Richard Roseberg, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Maureen, always good to have you.
Good to see you. Happy New Year.
So I noticed your predecessor, Rich Roseberg, Phil Van Buskirk, held the job for 32 years. Do you plan to stay that long?
Not probably in this job. I don't know that I'm going to make it that long. I'm hitting my 60s last year. And however, I have worked for Oregon State University for 30 years, actually, this month, but only the last four as the director here.
You know, it can probably be a bit of a mystery to people who don't deal with farms or farmers directly. So break some of the seal of mystery here and tell us what an extension service does.
Sure. Oregon State University, the Research and Extension Center, didn't just drop out of the sky a couple of years ago. We've actually been in the Rogue Valley since 1911. But before that, the genesis of it goes back to the Civil War and Abraham Lincoln. And even though he was defined by the Civil War, some other significant things really happened during that time. And he realized, and others realized, that in the 1860s, the U.S., the population was growing rapidly, industrialization was in full swing, and he realized that we needed a better educated population. So in those days, you were lucky to graduate from high school, and if you wanted some kind of a higher education, unless you were from a wealthy family in the East and were going to go to Yale or Harvard or a place like that, you didn't really have much of an opportunity. And so they created the land-grant university system, which was to put a university in every state where a student at minimal cost could attend. And they focused on the agricultural and mechanical arts. That's in the legislation. So all of this, there's one in each state, and all of the land-grant universities have strong agricultural programs, and almost all of them have strong engineering programs. And the agricultural and mechanical arts, that even persists today in some of the names, like Texas A&M University is the land-grant university in Texas. That's where that comes from. So that was 1862, and Oregon State became the land-grant university for Oregon.
So it was part of the deal that in order to get the land grants for the colleges, there also had to be this outreach, this extension?
Yes. Yeah, there were two separate things that happened after that. In 1887, the Hatch Act created the agricultural experiment station system in each of the states associated with the land-grant university to do agricultural research, because they realized we needed to better understand how to grow more crops, grow better quality, all those kinds of things. And so that was 1887 that established the research experiment station system. Actually, the one here in Southern Oregon was the third in the Oregon State system that was developed. That was 1911. That was established. The first one was 1901. There's 11 branch stations around the state now. But then in 1914, the Smith-Lever Act, another federal act, created the Cooperative Extension Service. And the idea was, if people couldn't pick up and move to Corvallis and take classes and learn about things, how about if we extend the information out from the university to all the counties? And so it's a system of non-credit education, but it's a way to extend the knowledge and the discoveries from the university out to all the people so that they could stay in their own communities and learn. So that was 1914 when that started.
So the educational component is stuff like Master Gardener programs, Master Recycler, things like that?
Right. Any of those programs that fall under the rubric of extension, you know, initially it started off pretty much in agricultural type things, animal husbandry, crop production. But then that morphed into One of our older programs is 4-H, which is a youth development program, youth leadership program. We think of the livestock events at the county fair and things like that as 4-H, but it's involved in a lot more other areas now. So that's youth development. Master Gardeners, you know, is the one you mentioned, is another program that's very strong in this county, focused on the homeowners and people that are gardening or managing smaller landscapes. How can they do a better job, not only growing what they want to grow, but also to interact better with the environment around them?
It's been really interesting to look at some of the older records for the extension programs and see how they taught homemaking skills, preserving, cooking,
right,
gardening, in order to keep those families going during the Depression.
Right, right. And nutrition is another area, exactly, Maureen, that has been had a long history in the Extension Service for this informal, non-credit type of education. And it was originally focused on basic nutrition and cooking and preserving foods and things like that. And we still do those things, but now there's also a lot of components about folks that are low-income folks, how to better use the food that they do have access to, and also other issues related to hunger and poverty and things like that, because those are all intertwined, you know, because they realized it's not just can you take some food out of your garden and preserve it, but really it's the whole food cycle that interacts with the economy, that interacts with social things. So in the nutrition area, we're doing that. I mean, we have a forestry extension program. And again, that's one that's evolved over the years. Historically, it was how do you get the most wood production off of your land? And wood production is still important, but it's a much greater component now in terms of, you know, the environmental interaction, water quality that comes off of these forests, the fire reduction potential, all these other kinds of issues that goes on with forested lands.
And you have a lot of classes now, don't you?
Yeah, we do have a lot of classes. And again, that's the focus of the extension mission, is to extend that education through classes. So we have classes that are OSU faculty put on, whether it's the forestry agent or whether it's the master gardener agent, you know, land stewards, small farms, all of them put on programs. But some of these groups have a cadre now that's pretty large of pretty well educated folks that are not OSU employees, but they're part of our associations, our volunteer group, and they also put on classes that so they can take their expertise that they've learned and extend that out to the community. So we have lots and lots of classes, some of which are directly put on by OSU faculty, and some are put on by volunteers that have been trained through the OSU Extension programs.
This is Stories of Southern Oregon on the Jefferson Exchange. Maureen Flanagan Battistella, the curator, back with us. Richard Roseberg is our guest this month. He's the director of the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center, or SOREC, based near Medford. I'm not the first person to do that, am I? You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Tell your story about your contact with the Extension Service over the years. We'd like to hear from you. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. So a lot going on any given day, it sounds like, at SOREC.
It's a busy place. We have, depending on how you count the people, we have over 30 people that work there. We have a budget of over $3 million from all sources, which includes federal sources, state sources, local sources, grants, contracts, class fees, all those kinds of things. So it is a busy place, and we have the extension programs I mentioned, and we still have a very active ag and natural resource research program. We have four faculty that are primarily involved in doing research, and not just doing these classes, but doing research that benefits the wine grape community, the pears, livestock, row crops, those kinds of things as well.
Which raises a question about the how flexible you have to be at an extension center to keep up with the changes in the crops over the years. I noticed there have been many just in the 35 years that I've lived in the Rogue Valley. But for example, with hemp, where I know that the Oregon State University at Corvallis has certainly reinstituted its hemp institute. But is that pushed out to the extension centers? Do you have a lot of knowledge in your hands here that you can help the fairly new hemp farmers with?
Hemp's a tricky one. It's kind of a yes and no question, because
federal grants.
Yes, because exactly right. It's the only example that I can think of where there's a crop that has been grown for decades illegally, and there's a fair amount of expertise that individual growers may have developed over time, and then it's sort of come out of the shadows, and at least the hemp part of it is now deregulated to a certain degree and is legal, and there's still questions about that, about the absolute legality of all the steps in the process. So Oregon State is in the position where we have a tremendous amount of expertise in the basic disciplines in terms of plant breeding, for example, or irrigation or soil fertility or those kinds of things. However, there's very little practical expertise of folks like myself having actually grown it. We have not, with a couple of exceptions of folks that have done so overseas as part of their OSU assignments. So last summer, for example, after the passage of the 2018 Farm Bill, last summer is the first summer that I was allowed to grow hemp legally, officially, as part of my job. And we did have a small research plot out there. And it's a learning experience. So to answer the question, unlike every other crop where we have decades of research and experience and expertise, we don't have that personal experience, but we do have expertise in the disciplines that some of the private growers perhaps do not.
So OSU Oregon has an advantage in this agricultural commodity, though, because OSU is a seed certifier, and that's unlike any other state. Is that correct?
That's almost right. OSU has a very strong seed certification program, which is, of course, a legacy or part of. We have a lot of important seed crops in general, grass seed, vegetable seed, all these kinds of things. So last summer, the seed certification program did start certifying hemp seed, even while at the same time they were leading the nationwide consortium of writing the rules of how do you define the various parameters to certify hemp seed. And that's one example where I think we really can immediately provide a real benefit for the growers and the processors, is because it's been an illegal industry and everyone has been breeding and developing their own strains and keeping those a secret, the transparency has not been there. So if you're a grower and you buy a bag of seed of variety X from your hemp seed, you're trusting that person is giving you the real deal. Whereas if it's a certified seed, that means it's been tested and evaluated by Oregon State University, that you're really buying the seed that you think you're buying in the bag.
Hemp aside, what are some of the other important seeds that come out of Southern Oregon from the region you serve?
That's good.
In the seeds? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Historically, this has been a really excellent region for seed production because of the climate, the warm, dry summers, the mild winters. In the past, there were things, a lot of alfalfa seed and various new varieties of grass seed. There used to be a lot of flower seed. There still is. It's kind of a different focus and a different scale. But flower seeds, for example, are very tricky to grow, and this climate is excellent for that. And I know Maud Powell, who leads the Small Farms program, has led. There's been a little bit of a renaissance in that of growers of flower seeds. There's been an increased amount of native grass and forb seed production. In other words, can we grow native grasses and forbs in sort of a farming situation and use those seeds to replant out in the forests and wildlands when there's been a fire, for example, to disturb that. And interestingly enough, conifer seeds, Weyerhaeuser and other companies have been very active for decades in producing conifer seeds to produce tree seedlings that eventually get planted out in the forest.
This is Stories of Southern Oregon on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Rich Roseberg, who is the director of the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center, or SOREC. Maureen Flanagan Battistella is here with us as well. You can join us at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org.
So Jackson County and Josephine County passed legislation about non-GMOs or non-genetic engineering. How did that affect the opportunity that Southern Oregon growers have to produce certified seed?
That was when the non-GMO legislation passed. it had an immediate effect.
And it was very controversial.
In the fact that, for example, several sugar beet seed companies had very active research here and production fields here. Because, again, it's a great climate for seed crop production in general. And so a lot of sugar beet seeds were grown here. And then the seed was, of course, planted other places, Colorado and other places, to actually produce the sugar beets. Commercial sugar beets, these days, you know, over 90% of what was grown was GMO. So that immediately ceased when that passed. So that was an opportunity that went away. However, other than that, there were not a lot of examples of crops where it was a negative. You know, we're not a big corn or soybean or cotton or canola producing areas, and those are very big commodity crops.
But has it been a positive?
That's a tricky question too, is whether or not there have been some folks that have tried to use that as a marketing advantage and saying this crop or this seed was grown in Southern Oregon, and because it's grown in Jackson County, you know for a fact it's not GMO. Maybe that's a small benefit, at least psychologically or socially. Again, if a seed is certified that you're producing, the identity is known, whether it's GMO or not.
Let's take a phone call here. Grab your headphones while we listen to Sherry in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about the Master Gardener classes, which are starting up at the end of January, and it's still possible for people to sign up for those. They're open to anyone in the Rogue Valley who would like to come out on Wednesday and come to our classes. And all people need to do to sign up is to call the extension number. Can I give you that?
Yes, please.
Sure. It's 541-776-7371. So we're starting the last week of January, and it goes through May on Wednesdays, and lots of really great information for people who like to garden and grow tomatoes and grow flowers and seeds, and we do practice sustainable gardening practices.
Okay, I'll make sure that number goes up on our website, 541-776-7371. Master Gardener program starting up at the end of January. Good information.
Thank you, sir.
Right, and that's a great example of a class that's led by one of our faculty. Very, very popular. We have several hundred now active Master Gardener volunteers, and it's a great program.
Just in terms of assisting farmers, as you go back and look at the history of SOREC, which you run now, I mean, are you surprised sometimes at the things that people tried to grow in this region?
Am I surprised by the things that people try to grow? It's interesting that people will try to grow lots of different things. Olives, for example, is one that was tried here, and we'd think, gosh, it's a nice warm climate.
Mediterranean
climate, and they do grow well, but then every so often we'll have a cold winter every few years that will freeze them back to the ground, that kind of thing. Really, really growing crops is not so much the issue in the Rogue Valley. We can grow almost anything except for citrus or truly mm-hmm. tropical things like bananas and things like that. But almost any kind of crop we can actually grow. It's the processing and marketing, because we are a rather isolated valley away from major population centers. So the main successful crops are things that can be grown, processed in some way, that have some kind of added value, either better flavor or some kind of characteristic or something that makes them valuable enough that somebody in Portland or Seattle or Chicago or San Francisco would want to buy them.
So if people go, we do have a link to SOREC on our website. If they go to there, will they find all the offerings that you've talked about here today?
Yes, right. The class offerings, a list of our faculty and staff, contact information. If any of those programs seem to be of interest to you, if people are interested in the research that our research scientists are producing, all those links and connections are there.
All available at SOREC, the Southern Oregon Research and Extension Center. Richard Roseberg is the director of the program now, has been for getting on 4 years. Thanks so much for joining us on this month's edition of Stories of Southern Oregon.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And Maureen Flanagan Battistella, thanks for rounding them up.
Rich, thanks for your work.
That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Oddly enough, we'll talk about food and keeping the best stuff in the hands and mouths of kids coming up.